Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Robert Jensen. He's an author and a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Sonali.
President Obama, in an op-ed in the Huffington Post, just announced his proposal to raise the pay threshold for overtime wage protections. Under the current and outdated law, workers who make $23,660 or less are automatically eligible for overtime pay protections. Only 8% of all workers fall into that category. Under Obama's proposal, those making $50,440 a year or less would be protected, or at least 44% of the workforce. The president wrote, quote, "In this country, a hard day's work deserves a fair day's pay. That's at the heart of what it means to be middle class in America." He plans to discuss the proposed bill in detail in Wisconsin this week. Predictably, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce complained that Obama's plan was, quote, "completely divorced from reality and adding more burdens to employers and expecting them to just absorb the impact." Well, Bob, the president has been riding high on his recent successes at the Supreme Court. What do you make of this proposal?
Well, first of all, the business community's response is predictable. Anytime there's an attempt to give workers rights, the business community will tell you it's going to collapse the economy. It tends not to, so we can put that aside. I think what we should focus on this particular proposal is it's a wholly inadequate response. And it's interesting that there's even debate about that. So to readjust the overtime law for inflation and give more people access to the mandated time and a half is perfectly sensible. But it's an inadequate response to the crisis in labor markets. We should be looking at why businesses put the screws to people to make them work more than 40 hours a week. That means they don't hire more people. That undermines economic stability. There's a whole lot of issues wrapped up in this one simple time and a half for overtime proposal that we should be talking about. And I hope that the president can push that kind of discussion forward.
The Supreme Court issued two more rulings yesterday that progressives are cheering. First, by a 5-4 vote, justices temporarily halted the implementation of a Texas law that would have effectively shuttered a majority of reproductive health clinics offering abortion services. The reprieve will enable Texas clinics to continue operating while the court decides whether or not to take up the case later this year. And in a separate ruling, the Supreme Court decided that Arizona voters had the right to create an independent redistricting commission despite the GOP-dominated state legislature's argument that only lawmakers had the right to draw district lines. Arizonans voted 15 years ago on Proposition 106 to create such a commission. The justices who ruled in favor of the commission argued that voters have the ultimate authority to decide on methods of democratic decision-making. Arizona's lawmakers have often governed far to the right of the state's population. Bob, what do you make of these two rulings?
Well, I think this is an example of how the U.S. Supreme Court is a place where high-minded individuals debate on matters of intellectual principle. Okay, that was my attempt at a joke. I mean, I've never seen a time that I've been paying attention when the Supreme Court was more overtly politicized. You know, we pretend that the Supreme Court decisions are a matter of law, and certainly legal principles and legal doctrines matter. But we've seen a highly politicized court making decisions from both the liberal and the conservative side, I think, that are motivated by politics. And I think this is one of those cases. On the abortion decision, it's not clear what the court's angling for because there was no explanation of why they stayed this. It's a good thing that that horrendous abortion law in Texas, where I live, has been put on hold. It's a serious attack on women's rights. But it's hard to know where any of this is going.
And the Supreme Court also ruled yesterday to allow the practice of execution by lethal injection. On tomorrow's uprising, we'll have a live in-studio discussion about it with actor Mike Farrell, president of Death Penalty Focus. Later in the show today, we'll speak with Dar Jamil about the court's ruling on the EPA. And finally, a newly revealed Justice Department report on how police handled last year's unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, concluded that law enforcement badly mishandled the situation. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch obtained the DOJ report and found that police responded with an uncoordinated effort that sometimes violated free speech rights, antagonized crowds with military-style tactics, and shielded officers from accountability. Among the tactics that the report denounced was a failure of commanders to provide more details to the public after Officer Darren Wilson killed Michael Brown, and the use of dogs for crowd control, plus the fact that tear gas was sometimes used without warning and on people in areas from which there was no retreat. Also inappropriate was the practice of positioning an officer atop an armored vehicle to monitor the crowd through rifle sights and the arbitrary nature of arrests and the use of force. Well, Bob, the media spotlight has moved away from Ferguson. How important is it for this report to be widely read and reported on?
Well, it should be, of course, and I'm not going to hold my breath for the mainstream media to do that, so I hope Uprising continues to press these issues. This is interesting because there are a lot of problems with modern policing, but two fundamental problems, and both of them are on display in this issue in Ferguson. One is, of course, racialized disparities, especially racialized disparities in the use of force and deadly force. We saw that, and we've seen it in other places. The other is this hyper-militarization of police forces. This is a serious issue. Now, we saw this play out in cycles. It happened in the famous Battle for Seattle in 1999. The police recognized their tactics had been inappropriate, and they changed. But unfortunately, that change has led toward this more militarized urban police forces. These are serious questions that should be on the agenda. And in addition to the racialized disparities, that militarization of the police needs to be kept front and center.
Bob, thanks as always for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Sonali.
Robert Jensen is an author and a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.